everybody. Welcome to the Entrepreneur Experiment podcast with me, Gary Fox. The Entrepreneur Experiment reveals the secrets and systems world-class founders use to master their business, their brain, and their body. This is the Entrepreneur Experiment Mentor Moments, where every weekend I reveal 10 minutes from our most impactful founders. This week, it's Mark Cummins. He sold not one, but two businesses to Google. He built his first one while he was studying for his PhD, and within 12 months had sold it to Google. Within a couple of years, he started a new company, Pointy, and again went back and sold it to Google, this time for a reported $160 million. This is how he did it. Enjoy today's episode. But first, quick thank you to my partners. Thanks to my partner, Square. Everything your business needs, like payments, menu management, online ordering, chatting endlessly about the weather? Well, you're on your own there. Square. Everything your business needs. Almost. Visit square.com. If you're a regular listener of the pod, which I hope you are, you'll know I've been hosting the podcast from my Connick offices for quite a while now, and things have gone really, really well. So well, in fact, that I'm now a member of Connick offices, working and recording from one of their spaces. This means I can vouch for the benefits it gives to any business. On that note, Connick offices have given me a number of exclusive complimentary day office trials for my audience. So try it out for yourself for the day, bring your team, no catches. Simply go to the web link in the description and enter Gary23, so it's Gary23, to claim your complimentary office for a whole day. It's a pretty fantastic offer. Thank you, Connick offices. Now, on with today's episode.
Your first company, you sold it within a, did I hear you correctly? You sold it the following year after starting it.
Yeah, well, it's kind of a funny one because I was doing it was sort of in parallel with my PhD. And so like it's kind of hard to pinpoint exactly like when I started because I kind of like faded into it a bit. But yeah, it was definitely less than a year of full time when the company was acquired. Yeah.
How does that happen?
Yeah, it's quite the first one was a bit unusual. Like it wasn't probably a typical journey in that we were commercializing some technology that myself and my co-founder had developed during our PhDs. So even though the company was relatively young, like the technology that it was using was based on like, you know, many years of research, and we had like a very fairly unique and well established piece of tech basically. And so when the company started, we could, you know, from day one, we could do some, you know, pretty impressive tech demos. So what we were working on was search with an image. So I'm sure people have seen it by now where like you take a photo of something or you upload a photo to Google and you can get back search results based on the content of the image. And so that was something that we both worked on. And so, we were kind of commercializing that. And so, yeah, we developed some Android apps around it. This was like very early on when you know the iPhone I think had only been released like the previous year. Certainly the first Android phone came out that year, and so we made a little bit of a splash. I guess we were one of the first featured apps on the Android market, and we started to get, you know, I think we got 50 or 60,000 users in our first month, which was pretty good for those days. Mm-hmm. You know, and so like we kind of just kind of attracted attention quite quickly. And, you know, I guess we came to Google's notice and we started talking to them, and they had an internal team working. It turned out they hadn't really announced anything. We didn't know they were working on it, but they had an internal team working on something very similar. And so we kind of got to know that team. And in the end, like they pretty quickly made us an offer. And, you know, while we were still a young company, we hadn't even taken any investment at that point. So, you know, myself, my co-founder had a long discussion about it. It was actually a difficult decision about, you know, because we were right in the early days of the company, and like, do you want to end the journey that quickly? But ultimately we kind of just balanced everything up and decided it was the right move. And so, we were a tiny company at the first time around, like a 2-person company basically. So wow. It was a short, sharp journey, but a lot of learning, a lot of accelerated learning, I'd say, in that one.
Talk to me about that, because you said something interesting there about it was actually a difficult decision. I think when people think of, oh, if Google, the dream, if Google wanted to buy my company, I'd be so happy. Talk to me about that decision-making process. What was that like?
Yeah, well, it's complicated because, you know, you're just at the start of something. You can see it sort of starting to gain traction. Like I said, we really had this great initial response from users and, you know, you're kind of projecting ahead into the future about where you might be. And then you're kind of thinking, well, like, you know, do I want to take an acquisition now or not? And it was also a complicated personal decision because we had to move. I was actually in Oxford at the time doing my PhD. So, and we had to, you know, as part of the acquisition, moved to California. And, you know, we both had relationships. We're like, do we want to be in long distance relationships? Like, you know, how does, so it was almost like there were four decision makers. You know, it wasn't just myself and my co-founder. It was also our partners. And we were kind of, you know, you were also trying to weigh up those kind of factors. So, and yeah, it's not an easy thing to weigh up. You're trying to, you know, think about the probabilities of all the different outcomes, I guess. But in the end, I think in retrospect, I think we definitely made the right decision because we were very early on in the kind of maturity of like machine learning and computer vision. And, you know, that market is still, I would say, very concentrated inside the larger companies. And we didn't know that at the time, but like, I think it probably was the right thing to do to you know, I think some of the bigger companies have a natural advantage in some of that stuff because they have, you know, the scale, the reach, the data. And so working on it internally turned out to be probably the right path. And it was definitely rewarding for us. We got to see our tech sort of deployed to, I guess, billions of users at this point. So, yeah, it wasn't an easy decision, but I think retrospect, probably the right one.
What's it like when you sell your company? Because people talk about the financial rewards, and I'm sure, obviously, we can't reveal that, but I'm sure it was a sum. Does it change your motivation at all? Do you kind of go, oh, that's great, now I have that? Or does it just give you a comfort blanket to then go explore on a bigger level?
It's obviously transformative in some ways. Like, you know, I you could do things that, you know, you have a different level of freedom, I guess. I mean, like, one thing I started to do was angel invest in other startups, which, you know, obviously I was a PhD student before that. My PhD stipend was like, I think, 12,000 a year or something. Like, you know, it was very, very minimal. And all of a sudden I kind of had, you know, definitely a big safety net and, you know, salary of a Google engineer or something. So it was a huge financial shift. I tried very hard to ignore it actually for a while. Like, you know, I'd kind of not really kind of change my lifestyle very much. But, you know, over time, you know, it does allow you to do extra stuff. But the investing side of things was actually pretty useful later on. So I started to invest in other startups. And, you know, obviously, you know, investing can have financial, you know, upside as well. But what was particularly useful was that I got to see, you know, how all these other companies worked, you know, because I'd, you know, be an investor and I get their updates, their monthly updates or whatever. I kind of see how those situations evolve later on. Like, you know, some of the companies raised later rounds or some of the companies like didn't succeed. And, you know, that perspective that I got into, like, a, you know, I don't know, 10, 15 companies, I don't know what the number was, but it was enough to kind of have a sample of how, you know, how it works, and also see it from the investor side of the table, where when I was later running Pointy and raising money, I kind of really understood, you know, the what the people on the other side of the table were thinking, and, you know, how things might play out for us, and like what the good companies had done and the bad ones, you know, kind of you begin to pattern match a bit like that. So that was very valuable actually, and that was sort of unlocked, I think, by the first exit.
So what were the key things you learned as an angel investor?
I mean, a lot of it is sort of pattern matching. That's maybe harder to put into to like a few pithy phrases. I mean, what stands out? I mean, the first thing is that it's extremely humbling, right? You know, you make all these investments with high conviction, and I know kind of rationally the statistics are like 1 in 10 startups succeed or whatever, but you kind of think, well, these ones all seem really good.
Like, yeah, yeah, I'm different.
I know a bit about startups, so. But then you find that you're just the same, right? You know, so it's humbling, and like, you know, stuff goes wrong. There's a lot of luck. It's just irreducible, I think. You know, so that's the first thing. The second one is, I mean, I suppose what's characteristic of the better companies. I don't know if I can really put this into words, but like you can see the sort of energy in their their update emails. Like, actually, the speed at which people reply to an email is incredibly predictive of their future success. It's amazing. Like, I've heard this from other places too. Like, you know, just how quickly, how engaged people are is very. It just seems very telling. Even if you say this to people, it's the ones who are really on top of things does seem to sort of translate into everything. You know, they're the obvious ones that, like, you have to be in a large market. You know, you have to have a good team. You know, you have to not compromise on the quality of the team. I've seen companies go wrong where they get the wrong investors involved, where the investors can be a negative force. You know, you can have bad board dynamics, all sorts of things. So you just build up this sort of whole sort of repertoire of all the different pitfalls.
I hope you enjoyed today's episode with Mark. Wherever you're listening, whether it's Spotify or Apple, click subscribe. And please give us a review as it helps the pod to grow. I'll see you back here on Tuesday for a brand new Idea Lab. Until then, have a great week.